right, so we'll start out by telling you a little about the project. So again, I'm Amanda Hardiman, and this is Adam Watson. And we both work for the state. He's with the archive, and I'm with the Folklife program. And we're working with Holly, and she was working with DJ on the Skadston Farm Project, where we're collecting oral histories with farmers in this area. And the oral histories, that's just basically your experiences, your family history, your understanding of doing agriculture, farming, livestock, you know, in this area. And what we do is we save these oral histories in the state archives. So Adam's good with taking care of all those resources. And then we make them available to people in the future so they can learn more about agriculture and how it's changed in the county, some of the issues you all faced, because everybody's got a different story. And we want your stories to kind of color our history. You know how stuff, the right stuff doesn't always make it in the history books. And that's what oral history does, it gets real human perspectives, like your story and the way, you know, some of the issues you had to deal with. So that's what we'll talk about. It's be very informal questions. And at the end, we hope to highlight it in an exhibit. And the exhibit will be at the FSU Museum in Tallahassee. And it'll also be, hopefully, at the Gadsden Art Center in Quincy. And we hope that in the future people can learn how to basically find a better way to provide, you know, resources to farmers, and if anybody wants to get into farming, that they can learn from your all's experiences. Mm-hmm. So just want to make sure it's okay with you if we record this and if the recordings go to the state archives.
Yes, that's fine.
And if you need to take a break or anything, let me know. We can do that. But I'll just start out. Can you give me your name and date of birth?
My name is Ronnie Jackson. I was born 1956, April the 5th, 1956.
Born here?
Yes, I was born right here in Mount Pleasant, in the little house across my yard.
And Adam, if you can keep an eye on the cameras for me, please.
They're already recording everything.
Yeah, just make sure the angles are right and, you know, he doesn't move out of the frame.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit of what was it like growing up here?
Well, that was interesting. I put it that way. First off, I started working when I was about 5 years old in shade tobacco, working out, doing five years old. I was toting tobacco and stuff. And I always been on the farm, really been farm oriented, because of my uncle and grandparents was farmers. They farmed here. And so I started, after working, I guess I really got the first, I got my first haul. My uncle gave me a pig at about the age of 12. And it was supposed to have been for our meat source if I raise it up. And so I started out with it. And it was a gift. So I got it about halfway grown. And I acquired another hog for doing some work for a guy. He didn't pay me no money. He paid me on another hog. So I had two pigs. So I decided that I talked to talk to my uncle. He told me, you ought to try raising you some pigs. So that's what I did. I bred the gilt, and I started with that one. It was a task, you know, 12 years old, you trying to learn how to do stuff. But I enjoyed it, and I kept on. And so I got my first pigs, and I think probably about 6 or 7 pigs that I raised up. And I got a chance to sell those pigs for $10 a piece. Man, that was a lot of money. And so I just kept going and stuff. And the time wasn't so pleasant. Back then, it was kind of hard. During that time, my mom was, as you want to say, she required to be a single parent. It was kind of hard. My brothers and sisters, we had, it was seven of us. And so I started trying to help provide for the family at that time. So I kept on raising hogs and stuff, and eventually just growing. I tried some of everything. After I got the hogs, I kept increasing my hogs, and then I got into high school. I had about five or six sows at that time, and raising hogs, going to high school, doing everything all the other kids done, but I had to come home and feed up. And usually just trying to learn stuff. My uncle had me plowing a mule. I learned how to plow a mule to raise a garden and stuff. I had some pretty straight rows, but you could stand and look north, but the rows went south, east, and west, so you couldn't see all the way down the row. It wasn't a straight row, it was just something, but it was exciting. Mm-hmm. And then I kept on going and working out. I got me a public job, started working when I was in high school at a little grocery store. And I kept on raising hogs until I got out of high school. And I had, one time I had about 40 sows somewhere. I had increased over the years.
While you were in high school?
While I was, right after high school, I got up to 40 sows. I guess I had about 10 or 12 when I was a senior in high school. And then I went, more or less after I got out of high school, I really got into the hog raising business, because you was really making a little money off of hogs at that time. And then the market, I guess that was in the 80s, somewhere around 80. I got married.
I'm going to wait until they pass. So can you talk a little bit about the market and what changed?
Yeah, the market in 79, I got married, had a family. And the hog market was kind of up, but it wasn't up. It was about 45 cents somewhere, I guess, you was getting for a pig. And you was clearing about almost $100 a hog. And back in the 80s, and that was pretty good fare and good money. And then I guess in about 83, I was row cropping a little bit, farming and working. I worked for Winn-Dixie Industry. I started work in 76 working for Winn-Dixie. And I was working there and farming, row cropping. And it was hard. You take one job to take care of another job. All you was doing was just changing hands. And I guess about 84, that hog prices went down, and they went to nothing. You were selling 35 cent hogs. And the price, the market didn't keep up with the times. And the hogs went down, because I sold some hogs for 25 cents a pound, and it cost $100 to feed them out. You sell them for 25 cents a pound, didn't bring $50, you know, and that's kind of rough. And so after I had the hogs, I guess in 86, I started trying to get out the hog business. And I guess 86 to 92, I was pretty much out of it. Then I bought me a couple of cows during that time. Well, as I was selling out my hogs, I bought me a couple of heifers and started trying to raise a few cows. And eventually, I got out the hog business and had the cows.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you say, were you working at Winn-Dixie still?
Yes.
During this time?
I worked at Winn-Dixie.
So has most of your life, has any kind of farm work been on the side?
Yes, it's been on the side for a whole life. I always farmed, worked around on the farm and stuff. I worked for Winn-Dixie from 76 to 2006. until my health started failing. I had to get out of doing that there. But I always been farm oriented with raising a garden and doing, you know, just trying to have enough to survive off of. And you raise hogs, that's all you're doing is surviving. Farming always been, people took it as a business, but farming really was designed way back just to feed your family. You'll make a little money off of it for your surplus, but it wasn't no taking care of nothing, nobody. And we used to just take, when I was trying to row crop, I would take hogs, raise hogs, and take them to buy fertilizer and seed and get the seed. And after it, raise it up, if it made a good crop, put it right back into the whole crop. So all it was doing just like a wheel, just going round and round.
Mm-hmm. Now you were saying that you started working shade tobacco when you were 5. Did
yes.
Your family do that? Or?
No. We was out working on a farm right up the road. Everybody in the summer when you get out of school, before you get out of school, they'll start. You go out and work a little bit. And I made so much, it was a whopping $2 a day.
What did you do as a 5-year-old?
Tote tobacco. I tote it from the primer. He crapped it off the tobacco stalk, gave you a pad, and you had a thick piece of half-inch plywood that they cut for a pad to lay it on. You had to put one hand on top of it, and if you break the stem, they want to dock you, and all that, that's kind of stuff. It was hard work, but we did it. And that's the way we bought our school clothes and stuff.
Whose farm was it?
It was Pamo's, Lee Pamo's farm, and I worked to another place.
Lee
Paramore.
Paramore, yeah.
And that's where I first started working. And then I got up, as I worked during the summer, I worked on different places, like I worked at Herbert Hare's place out towards Greensboro. The pay was a little bit better, and so went there, and I was a little bit older, so they paid you according to how much you can do. I got up the crap back off the stalks and stuff, and it was tough. But I left tobacco work when I was about 15. I got on a summer program, mowing grass up the state hospital. And a whole while I still was doing my little farm work. I still was basically on the farm. I get off from up there. We worked from 7:30 till 2. I get off and I caught a ride from the highway out there and I had to walk home. I walk home and then I still had to do my little farm chores and stuff around here.
Did you like that kind of work or were you just doing it to make money?
Well, it wasn't just that whether I liked it or disliked it. It was a way you survived. Like I said, most of my work in the farm and stuff, I always tried to help provide for my mom and my other brothers and sisters, because it was rough. It wasn't no cakewalk. I had a rough life, but I didn't have a rough life because I could look at some other people and look at their life and see how rough it were with them. They was having a rougher time than I were because they was living on those farms. They was living on those farms. And I witnessed one time when I was about 10, 12 working in tobacco. We worked and the guy that I was tote tobacco for, he got mad because they was working by the piece then. You give you a punch. And he was contradicting the guy that was giving the punches out. And the boss man come out there and told him that you done got all you gonna get. And the guy made a statement, I'll go home. And the man told him at that time, you'll go home. I said, where your home at? I said, your home is somewhere ain't never been built. He said, because that house you live in is my house. I decided then, as I looked at it, and said, I never want to live on nobody's place. I never want to really not have some of my own. So my entire life, I started putting a little bit back, as they call for hard times. I put stuff back for hard times. I always wanted a home of my own. And I guess I was 21 years old when I got married. But I bought a house when I was right at 19, going on 20. I bought that little section of a 28 by 40 house. I bought, and they brought it. It was a prefab house. They brought it in, set it up. And I worked to get my own place. My grandmother gave me a spot of land, this little spot right here, to put my house on. I never wanted to be under nobody else's thumb to tell me you got to go, you got to do this. So I worked hard on the farm, not because I really loved it. That's the only thing I thought I could do. No, I knew it was other things out there, but I knew it was things that would feed me, take care of me, and help take care of my mom. And so that's what I did, and I worked all those other jobs. I would get a part-time job in a minute to do stuff. I worked rake yards when I was going, before I got in high school. As I was in high school, I was selling those hogs, raising hogs. I would still get on my bicycle and rake yard for people in the afternoons. And when I got in the 11th grade, I wanted me a car because I wanted to work in town, wanted me a public job. So I went to work for a little A&P grocery store part-time. During the summer, I had me a car, paid for me a little car, going back and forth. And that's the only thing I knew all my life was to work. And farm living is a way, you work all the time anyway on the farm. So I figured I should be getting paid for it. So,
could you have seen a way to do it full time?
I
make your living that way.
I thought about it, but I probably could have if I wanted to get in debt to get loans and stuff like that. But I really never wanted to have nobody else telling me how you got to do this or you got to do that. But, and also, the year that I was trying to raise corn and stuff, I tried to plant a little soybean, I planted a little corn, the drought come along, none of that was irrigated. They ain't know nothing about irrigating dry land stuff. A drought will wipe you out within. I had corn looking just as good as it could look. It got dry on it as it was tossing out. It made half the amount it should have made. I had to buy corn for hogs. So I figured then, if I'm gonna raise hogs and got to buy corn, I might as well go ahead on and buy the corn instead of going out there putting those thousands of dollars out there in feed, in fertilizing corn, and don't get nothing. I might as well go buy $1,000 worth of corn and stuff and feed them. And it was just,
can you see any way, like, I guess, what would you tell someone if they wanted to try to do farming full time now?
Well, I tell them, if you want to try to farm now, you need to have something else you want, really want to do that you could fall back on to have. And they say you got to have plenty of money to farm now. You need plenty of money or plenty of ways of getting hold of money. And you got to, it's no easy time. You got to be dedicated. You can't get out there and try that I'm gonna do this here because I'm gonna make a bunch of money. It takes time to establish yourself.
So the farm economy has changed over the last few decades in this area. Would you say that it's improved or not? What changes do you see?
Well, the farming has changed all the way around because they use different kinds of equipment and stuff. The people that really making it is farming a large area. You got to be big to make it in farming now. A little man, a weekend farmer, can't really do it unless he just doing it for a harvest. He can't plan on making a whole lot of money at it. It's good to get out and plant vegetables. You could kind of do it in little vegetables, little weekend garden, little neighborhood garden sales and stuff. But you can't get out there and say, this is what I'm going to do 5 days a week and I'm going to make it off of it. Even with the cow market. I raise cows because it's more or less a hobby than a business to me. I got cows because of my grandson. He raised cows, we raised a few beef cows. He loves 4-H and they picks their calves out and he show his calf off the farm. We raise cows to eat and stuff. It's nothing out there. You're not the quality that you have to make money. You can't do it by being small. You got to be big. Because it's, you sell one or two cows, you probably get, if you had 25 to sell, you probably would get 10 to 15 cent more a pound if you had 25 to sell in a group than you can at one or two at the time. You do fairly well. You get a fair premium, but you'll make more if you had a large group and stuff. So it done changed so much that I really don't keep up with what the equipment they use now because I can't afford it. I got an old piece of tractor that I've been had ever since in the 80s. It still run, it still do. It do all I want to do, mow and stuff like that. I can cut my garden up. That's it. But to keep up with the times, you have to be able to buy your $200,000 tractor. And you can't work on a job and pay for that kind of stuff. You got to be really, 1,000 acres, don't do it. I see people that raises 1,500 acres and they be talking about they just ain't making it. They need a larger place. So I just don't see how a man could get into farming not to make money off of it, but he can be a weekend farmer, a project farmer, grow little greens and have him a little fruit stand crops and stuff, make it, turn it over that way.
So I feel like you kind of addressed race relations a little bit when you were talking about wanting to own your own place.
Yes.
But can you talk a little bit about race and Gadsden County and agriculture?
Well, it's not many black people that really want to put out the time or the energy of farming or a boy being like on the farm. Most of them want to, when they were raised up on the farm, they want to take off because of the work ethic. You have to work hard to be in the country. Most of them don't even want to mow the yard. It's a shame to say, most black people that I know, they figure they could get somebody else to mow their yard than them doing it, in which we used to have to do it with a sling a long time ago. You know, we used to have to hoe this yard here, chop the big buffalo grass out and stuff. it done changed. The people just done got away from that kind of work. In the general, they didn't hang on to the places that the parents had. They looked at the dollar bill that they could get out of it, and most of them done got rid of them. They don't want to pay the tax on it. That's money they claim. I talked to people that had places. They paying the tax. They feel like they throwing money away. But if you own a little piece of land, it will pay off in the long run. If you run into tax, that's when you get rid of it. But just because you could get $5,000 and take it home and it be gone the next day, that's what happened to it. You get it, you spend it, it's gone. But long as you got that, you could go somewhere and say it with good intentions, say I own this here, and they would help you out. You don't have to put it up for collateral. A lot of states say I done owned this in place 10 or 15 years, 25 years. It have I call it a stepping stone for you. That they say, well, I'm gonna help them because he's trying to have some. But when you walk up there and I ain't got nothing, you got an automobile? No. They don't even own the cars and stuff. Don't even own a bicycle. You know, it's sad. I may be looking at it the wrong way, but that's the way I see it, and that's the way I feel in my heart, and I've seen it throughout the years that how it was.
Can you think of what could help that? What do you think could help some of the younger generation around here get more?
There's still some kids out there is very interested into the farm because we have kids come through our 4-H project. And they be wanting to raise chickens and stuff, but they don't have anybody that dedicated to show them the way or that want to spend the time. It's just a change of time. They don't even want to raise a chicken. We used to raise chickens to make sure we had eggs. We have chicken to eat. They don't eat that kind of stuff. I got some nieces and nephews who were really oriented to the farm when they was coming up. But they don't even want to eat the stuff that you raise. And nothing no better. It gets me sometimes we have a gathering or something, and they be talking about we might cook hamburgers. A lot of times it's hamburger, that cows that I raise. And they talking about, where y'all bought this from? We tell them from Jackson and Son Farm. And y'all, we raise that. That's good. But they don't want to put what it'll take in to get it. They think quick. And a lot of kids haven't been told that you don't get milk just from Winn-Dixie. It comes off out of a cow pasture. They think you ought to go to the store and get that. And I remember when we used to milk cows and stuff. I just wish that I could teach my grandson all these things. But he knows, but I wish that I could milk a cow, and I've been thinking about doing that. Just something to do, because I think he's really interested in the farm.
How old is he?
He's 12. He'll be 13 in October.
Well, you're doing the right thing working with him now.
He been raising around these cows and stuff ever since he was a little fella. He was bought here. When he come from the hospital, he was brought here to the farm.
Yeah.
And he's been, but he lives in town. But when he get out of school, he been here ever since the day he got out of school for the summer. Been right here on the farm. He hadn't been back to Tallahassee. He don't want to go back to the city. He don't want to go to Quincy. He wants to stay out here. It's kind of funny. A kid that be wanting to go, they usually be wanting to go, but he don't be wanting to go back to town for nothing.
Well, that's wonderful. And you got to relish it, because as he becomes a teenager, he might change his mind. But
yes.
You've got him now.
Yes.
That's great. So I know that historically a lot of African Americans worked on other people's farms. They weren't owning their own land. Was that your experience throughout your life, that you saw a lot of people working on other farms, not their own?
Yes, that's what I seen, a lot of people having to work out. But like I said, I was born and raised on our own place. My great-great-granddaddy had 380 acres. So we always own it.
And is that this property here?
Yes, it's part of it.
Do you still have the...
It's all of it still in the family, except 5 acres. And the last 5 acres were lost this year.
Somebody sold there.
What? They don't want to pay the bills,
yeah.
and get smart. They don't. And I said that people that get something easy, they don't know how to maintain. They don't care about nothing. They want their money out of it.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe where the boundaries of the property were for the record?
The boundary was about a mile up the road right there, about go south, and then down to the creek down here. And it was, I can't remember, 2,700 and some feet wide, and I don't know how far it went.
Some across the road?
Yes, it's okay. Across the road and down, and it's, and my grandfather, great-grandfather, had 2 families. He had 1 family on the other hill and a family over here. It's really, his property used to go across the creek. His second family had the property across the creek. He had 16 children.
Wait, did he have at the same time?
Yes. Yes. Most of them, they was within a month of each other, from the oldest to the bottom, you know, each. One is why
they not know about it.
Yes, they know. They stayed in the same house. They'll come to the same house. Like one have a baby or something. That's what I was told, that they would take care of that one and take care of that one over there.
And this was your great grandfather?
Great great grandfather.
What was his name?
Sam Mo.
What was
Sam? S A M
Jackson.
Moore.
With an E on the end?
Yes, more. M-O-O-R-E, yes.
M-O-O-R-E, got it. And so was he like the guy who purchased the land, the first
yeah.
one?
Okay. They say he purchased all the land for 25 cents an acre. 25 cents an acre, that's...
What's it go for now?
I don't know.
Not
got 25 cents. No. Yeah, probably about $3,000-$4,000 an acre. We really never had it just that. I don't know nothing about none of them having it value. That 5 acres up there with the house on it, they told me it sold for somewhere around $79,000-$89,000. So I really don't know. I'm just going by hearsay, but they also told me that my cousin had 3 mortgages on it, so that was one of the reasons he had to get rid of it. So I don't bother other people's business.
So how many people is the land divided among now?
It's this side over here was 8. On this side.
It's like your cousins and siblings?
Yeah, my grandmother's brothers and sisters, all of them was divided in 8.
Mm-hmm.
8
and 8. Well, that's pretty remarkable that it's still in the family. I don't know many people who can say that.
Yeah, it's been divided up and stuff, but it's been sold between them back and forth.
Yeah.
They changed given names and stuff, but it's exciting.
Yeah.
As I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and we was talking about this tract of land that it eventually get away from the old Moore Foundation. Simply because people don't want to maintain. They don't value stuff like my grandmother, my mom, them did, and like I do. You know, my value of a place. It's a little bit less than what my mom did. And so I would say that because, you know, just simply because of time. And people, like I say, all of them that get up wrong, they takes off and leave. It's just a fair few that still stay out here. They got places, they could have had places, but they don't want, they want to be in the city.
Can you talk a little bit about race relations and racism in this area?
Well, we get along fine. We get along fine. All the people out here, they know me and I know them and they know my grandparents and stuff. It's very, we all used to go down there to the creek and play in the creek. We didn't dirty the water up by different ones getting in. All of us jumped in and had a good time. Didn't nobody say nothing. But the only, you know, you always got some that's a little bit bitter than others. But overall, we all get along. We look out at each other. All the people on this road here, we all look out for each other.
Did you have any hardships or anything like that? Any tough times?
Well, it wasn't just that it was hard, but it wasn't just that we didn't have. I always thought that we never had what we should have had because my mom couldn't give it to us. But I'm 62 years old. I could say I thank God for not never being hungry, for not having something to eat. We always had something to eat. We always never missed a meal, but it may not have been what we wanted. But we had something to eat. If it wasn't nothing but green and stuff to raise in the garden and stuff, you may not have had two slices of pork chop at a meal or stuff, but you had something to eat. A chicken off the yard, stuff, chicken and rice and stuff. You made it. You made it.
Adam, you have any questions?
I was thinking about what you were talking about with the flight land or what it was called.
I can't remember what it's called. There's a name for it, but it's where it's a phrase that refers to the land that people pass down in their families, and they don't always keep good titles, like with the right names, and so the land gets taken away.
Yeah.
It kind of came from slavery times.
No.
Do you have any stories about anybody who had their land taken away? Or
Not that I could remember. And you hear people, when they do land search, title searches, and then that, they got somebody that done signed to it, that part owner got whole collateral, as it said, been put up somewhere. But nobody that I know of on this side.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you guys were pretty lucky.
Yeah, because my great-great-great-grandfather had a place about 2-3 miles over. In his place over there where the seminary camp at, they said his mom used to own that there, and they owned it that over there. Part of, they said the seminary camp was part of that property that got, something happened, but my uncle got it straight. He is in the late 60s and early 70s and got it straightened back out. So that was a time that I'm not too familiar about, but I always was told that.
Any other questions? Is there anything you would like people in the future to know? Any final thoughts?
Not really. No, I don't have anything, but give them advice. Just be dedicated in whatever you do. don't think nothing is an easy ride. You got to be dedicated to whatever your goals are, for whatever you set out to do.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.